From Windburg to White Oak, Hollidaysburg to Greenville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the halls of the state capitol in Harrisburg are deserted, but in a couple of weeks, the legislature will return to handle some unfinished business. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is here to discuss. Wood Services provides lifelong assistance for those living with intellectual disabilities. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Cheryl Kaufman of Wood Services in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And tariffs are neither free trade nor conservative economic policy. So says Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Mayor Jim Kenney triggered a political firestorm this past week when the city of Philadelphia announced it would no longer share real-time information with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, commonly known as ICE. ICE is responsible for enforcing the nation's immigration laws. Kenney caved to pressure from protesters and even went as far as to suggest he would abolish the agency. Abolishing ICE has become a rallying cry for the nation's far left-wing activists in recent weeks. The decision by Philadelphia to not assist in enforcing the nation's immigration laws drew immediate and strong condemnation from Republican gubernatorial candidate Scott Wagner, who called for passage of a state law that would prohibit so-called sanctuary cities in Pennsylvania. Sanctuary cities is the name given to municipalities like Philadelphia, which deliberately refuse to enforce federal immigration laws. Wagner said that Kenney, quote, put his liberal political philosophy ahead of the safety of his citizens, end quote, in making the decision. The issue likely will dominate both the governor's race and the upcoming elections for U.S. Senate and Congress. Speaking of elections, voters will have more than two choices for U.S. Senator this year. Libertarian candidate Dale Kearns filed over 11,000 voter signatures this past week, more than double the required amount for a third-party candidate to gain ballot access in Pennsylvania. Kearns is a 34-year-old electrical construction project manager from Delaware County. This is his first run for public office. He is making free market economics the centerpiece of his campaign. Kearns will face incumbent Democrat U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. and Republican nominee Congressman Lou Barletta in November. A grand jury report investigating allegations of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy will now be released by mid-August. The report will be edited in an apparent effort to prevent release of the names of some priests against whom accusations have been made, but who have not been charged with crimes. Attorney General Josh Shapiro says he will push for release of the entire document. Shapiro has even appealed to Pope Francis, urging him to call for release of the entire report. Catholic officials in all six Pennsylvania dioceses are on record as supporting release of the document. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. The state legislature is in the middle of an extended summer recess, but the political campaigns are in full swing. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is here to take a look at the issues that will top the agenda when the legislature returns next month. We'll also look at statewide campaigns as the traditional Labor Day kickoff of the political season approaches. Leo, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Leo, as we look at what wasn't done before the legislature took off on a rather extended summer vacation, which they haven't had the last couple of years because we had 3 years of budget crises. This year, there was no budget crisis, so the lawmakers are out from really the 1st of July until late September. As we look at what lies ahead, are there any key pieces of legislation that are going to dominate the agenda in the fall?
It's very unlikely that the legislature will deal with anything substantive between now and the election.
And, of course, the legislature not wanting to take up anything controversial between now and Election Day, because we'll point out every member of the state House and half of the state Senate stand for election this year, as well as, we'll talk a little bit later, a gubernatorial election year. Even after the election, the legislature comes back for a week or two, but in the last 8 to 10 years, there's generally been an agreement that that session, which in legislative terms is a sine-die session, that generally those few days that they're here, they don't do anything substantial there either because many of them are lame ducks.
Yeah, and the absence of activity in the lame duck session is – we would tend to view that as being a positive thing because some of the people who will be voting on legislation between Election Day and when they take the oath of office the following year actually won't be facing the voters ever again. So historically, there was when shenanigans happened, it happened post-election between Election Day and the end of the year. That's changed, you know, as you said, in the past 10 years or so. Usually if they're voting on anything, it's really just to finish up legislation that's already been agreed upon, has passed one chamber and then gone to another chamber and had minor editorial changes to it.
There are, however, some things that should occur. And talk a little bit about Republican efforts to bring about some regulatory reform. I know we do our business climate survey a couple of times every year, and even more so than taxes, high taxes, businesses and others say that regulations are something that is making Pennsylvania very unfriendly in terms of it being a place to do business. So what sort of regulatory reforms would we be looking at needing to occur?
There's actually a package of 5 bills that has moved from the House. It's actually in the Senate and hasn't received any attention in the committee that it's in, involving the removal of old regulations. One of my favorite pieces of legislation was actually sponsored by a representative, Kristen Phillips Hill, to create the Independent Office of the Repealer, which would actually go through and look at old regulations that have been on the books for a certain period of time to see whether or not those regulations are contradictory to more recent regulations. Incredibly enough, the government does not take contradictory regulations off the books usually. They just pile more regulations on. And one of the reasons that businesses in Pennsylvania do struggle with compliance so much is that there are contradictory regulations. And depending upon which regulatory body and even which regulatory agent you are talking to, they can change their mind as to which ones take primacy.
So all of these things are perking there, not likely to happen. One thing that did happen, Leo, was the legislature did take action when it came to the issue of opioid abuse in an effort to crack down on the overprescription of opioids. And amazingly, the governor vetoed it. Give us, first of all, some background as to what it is the legislature passed and why it did that.
The legislature passed a formulary bill essentially for workers' compensation recipients. Most private insurance plans have a formulary. So what that means is when you go to the doctor or you go to the pharmacy, your prescription plan says you can prescribe this medication at this dosage for this long. You know, here are the options that you have as a doctor. Usually these things are done for cost containment reasons, which is one of the reasons that it would be done in Pennsylvania. But the other thing that it does is it creates a set of guidelines that if you are prescribing a addictive pain medication, you know, in the state of Pennsylvania and you are on workers' compensation, the physician can only prescribe so many pills at a time, and there has to be a certain level of review involved throughout the process. It would also address some issues with regards to cost, that the state would only pay X dollars for each refill on a prescription or for each prescription, you know, given a a particular item. And the reason that that's important is that, oddly enough, trial lawyers have purchased compounding agents, which basically will take different pharmaceutical ingredients, put them together, and sell them. So these trial lawyers also happen to represent a large number of workers' compensation payments. So in essence, they are receiving money for the successful completion of a workers' comp case, but also receiving funds as they are prescribing drugs to the patients, or as drug prescriptions are being filled, to be more accurate. Governor Wolf, it's worth noting, gets a substantial amount of money from the trial lawyers. This legislation would actually have very negatively impacted some of these compounding pharmacies, particularly down in Philadelphia. So it's worth wondering whether or not that may have had an impact on the governor's decision to veto it, since he turned around and did some perfunctory work to fix, you know, quote unquote, some of the prescription problems in the state. And it is the same type of conflict of interest we see when the government or when the governor is negotiating labor union contracts, given that the governor has gotten millions of dollars from various public sector labor organizations who he is sitting across the table from.
And of course, we are in the midst of a gubernatorial election. We had what turned out to be a very nasty Republican primary last spring. It's been a little quieter over the summer, although Scott Wagner, who is the Republican nominee, he prevailed in the primary, has been out holding town hall meetings. He's been sparring off and on with Governor Wolf. What can we look to the fall? Is this going to be a hotly contested one? We went through a period of time, Leo, where incumbent governors who have had the opportunity to run for re-election, which has only been since, what, 1967, that governors could succeed themselves and run for re-election. They always won until Tom Corbett lost 4 years ago. Is this year going to be just a reversion to normal, or is this going to really be a race?
It has the potential to really be a race. Some of whether or not it really becomes a race is going to vary on how much national money comes into the state. This is one of the few states with a Democratic governor that was carried by President Trump in 2016. So if national funds come into the state in support of Senator Wagner, then former Senator Wagner, he resigned his seat, then it can definitely become a nasty knockdown, drag-out race. The other thing that it's kind of important to think about is that the House and Senate actually have the ability and should begin to put legislation on the governor's desk that will provide clear illustrations of how Governor Wolf will act should he get a second term, including that regulatory reform package that we talked about. And there are some other things that the legislature could do in order to ensure that Governor Wolf is on record on issues rather than being able to hide, to actually force him to either sign something, veto it, or let it become law.
We have been talking with Leo Knepper, who is the chief executive officer of the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, just a couple of words about the Citizens Alliance, also what your website is.
Our website is empowerpa.org, empowerpa.org. And I guess the best way to look at us is really as an accountability mechanism. What we do is we ensure that when folks in the legislature vote against good policy or they vote in favor of bad policy, we try and make sure that their constituents know in no uncertain terms that, you know, what their actions are versus what their words might be.
Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Loman.
Wood Services has grown from assisting a handful of individuals to helping thousands of people living with intellectual disabilities. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation learns more from Cheryl Kaufman of Wood Services in this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Cheryl, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Cheryl, share with the listeners a little bit about your organization, the Wood Services.
Wood Services is a nonprofit organization or a population health management and advocacy organization for people who are diagnosed with intellectual disabilities, developmental disabilities, behavioral challenges, and brain injury, brain trauma. We provide health care, education, housing, workforce, behavioral health, and case management services to those individuals. We serve approximately 4,000 children and adults who are diagnosed with these various disabilities. We provide housing that is across the continuum. So that includes independent living, group home settings. We have a 300-acre campus where we also provide campus-based residency. The ages of the individuals we serve span from about 5 years old up to the age of 87. We provide education services and day program services. We have therapeutic recreation. We have community integration programs. We provide medical care. We have our own medical center. We actually have a dental clinic as well right here on our campus in Bucks County. We have rehabilitation services and all sorts of therapy, from family therapy to behavioral therapy. We also provide vocational programming, job readiness training, and job placement, and all sorts of allied therapies that include speech, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. We have four affiliate partners, Allies, and Archway programs, which are located in New Jersey, and Tabor Services and Woods Community at Brian's House, which are both located in Pennsylvania. We also recently announced a fifth affiliation with Legacy Treatment Services in New Jersey, and that is pending New Jersey state approval.
Cheryl, your program is huge, and it's been around for a long time. What was the inspiration originally for getting this organization started?
Woods was actually founded over 100 years ago. We were founded in 1913 by a Philadelphia school teacher named Molly Woods. And Molly noticed that some of the children in her classes needed more care and attention than she was able to give them in her typical day. So she opened Miss Woods School in a farmhouse in Rosalind in 1913, and it was a progressive residential school for kids who had intellectual disabilities. We think of Molly as a real pioneer. Her approach at that time, at a time when these sorts of services weren't provided for people with intellectual disabilities, we consider her approach to be innovative. She was very creative. We really haven't ventured far from her original mission. She created individualized supports for each of the kids who was in her care, and that's exactly what we're doing today. Molly was recognized internationally for her efforts in this area.
In many ways, a very opportunistic organization in that nobody back then knew the continuum that people with special needs would be required to have. But you've just grown in a huge way. It's amazing how large the organization has become.
That's so true. Molly started with 25 kids in her farmhouse in 1913, and we are now serving 4,000 children and adults who have these various disabilities. So the organization has definitely grown. And as I indicated, we've partnered now with various other organizations who have become affiliates of Woods so that we can expand that continuum of care and so that we can rely on one another's expertise in moving our programs forward.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Cheryl Kaufman, the Vice President of Communications and Public Relations for an organization called Woods Services. Cheryl, how is your organization funded? How do you keep it going?
So we actually have various funding programs. We serve individuals from 23 different states, and every state has its own kind of funding mechanism for providing these kinds of services. So for the children who come to us, By and large, they are supported by their school district. Their home school district is required to provide them with an appropriate education. If they cannot serve that individual within their own school system, they will reimburse Woods to provide the education. Sometimes the school districts will also pay for residential treatment for that child. Other times, whatever human service organization oversees supports for residential treatment within that state or county will reimburse Woods for those services. We also receive some Medicaid and Medicare funding. In our Beechwood Neuro Rehab Program, which is for adults who have a brain injury, funding often comes from insurance companies because of an accident that may have caused the brain injury.
Cheryl, what are you most proud of the Wood Services?
I think we do an incredible job with, well, two different fronts. One, with people who have really challenging behaviors. We are able to help them develop coping mechanisms. And once they can get their behaviors under control, you know, they open themselves up to learn, to grow, to develop skills, you know, that lead them to greater levels of independence. You know we're making a difference when we see someone progress in that way. I'm also proud that we have a lot of families who will come to us and say, I was never able to have a relationship with my child when he or she lived at home. His or her behaviors would get in the way of us really having any kind of a constructive relationship. And now that he's at Woods, I now feel like I have a son again, and we're able to communicate and we're able to do things together and enjoy one another's company, and we weren't able to do that before. One mother, I love this quote, she said, Woods is my oxygen. So we've allowed her to breathe again because we've helped, you know, to get her son's behaviors under control.
Cheryl, if people listening to the program would like more information about Wood Services, how can they find you?
They can find us at our website, which is woods.org, or they can call 215-750-4000. That's our general phone number, and they'll be directed to any department where they can get the help or the information that they might need.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program, and my guest today is Cheryl Kaufman, the Vice President of Communications and Public Relations for Wood Services. Cheryl, thank you for being a guest on the program.
You are most welcome. Thank you, Joe.
The debate over President Donald Trump's use of tariffs continues. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania weighs in on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Despite fierce opposition, Congress and President Trump enacted one of the boldest tax reform packages in a generation. It wasn't perfect, but just as supporters predicted, the new tax law has helped unleash the power of the American economy. For the first time in a long time, we have a healthy economy that's firing on all cylinders. The 213,000 new jobs the United States added in June alone and steadily rising wages are the latest signs that tax reform is working for all Americans. In fact, there are now more jobs available than people to fill them. Given this amazing run, why would the president put it all at risk by imposing tariffs that hike prices for consumers on everyday goods, increase costs on businesses, and put U.S. jobs in jeopardy? The administration slapped a new 25% tariff in July on $34 billion of imports from China. Of course, China immediately retaliated. Each country has another $16 billion in additional tariffs teed up. And now the administration announced it's targeting a new 10% tariff on a whopping $200 billion worth of imports from China. The administration argues tariffs are a necessary negotiating tactic meant to bring partners to the negotiating table. That would be great, but China isn't negotiating. Instead, it's promised swift retaliation to the latest threat. Canada and Mexico responded to the steel tariffs with retaliation rather than returning to the NAFTA negotiating table. In this kind of escalating tit-for-tat trade war, there are no winners. Like a real war, be careful of friendly fire. The Trade Partnership Worldwide found that trade supports 36 million American jobs. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce estimates that tariffs could cost as many as 2.6 million American jobs, and that doesn't count the latest $200 billion round of tariffs. The headlines are filled with stories about businesses reeling with these decisions today. The last thing we need is more self-inflicted casualties. 25% tariff on steel, for example, means that any business using steel in its products will pay more for it. It will then face several bad choices: spend time and money trying to find substitutes, lay off workers, or increase prices. It's hard to keep up with the mounting list of imports and exports subjected to tariffs. Canada's retaliatory tariffs hit goods from steel and aluminum to boats, paper towels, and food. Mexico's hit cranberries, apples, and even bourbon. China's tariffs are already hurting soybean farmers across the heartland. These are only some of the hundreds of items subjected to retaliation, which hurt a vast array of American producers and farmers who sell outside the U.S. This is the opposite of the optimism we saw earlier this year when businesses across the country announced bonuses, pay raises, and increased wages in the wake of tax relief for taxpayers and job creators. That's because tariffs are the anti-tax reform. They are actually tax increases. Given the high stakes involved, it's time for Congress to act. This burgeoning trade war threatens us and some of our biggest trading partners. A number of lawmakers have taken steps to do just that. Requiring approval from Congress before imposing trade barriers would reclaim some of the legislative branch's trade authority found in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Over the years, too much was ceded to the executive branch. The president would be able to negotiate trade agreements, including addressing China's problems with intellectual property and forced technology transfers. But harmful policies like tariffs would require a congressional vote. This kind of congressional approval is especially necessary when the administration imposes tariffs based on dubious national security reasons. National security concerns should only be invoked when appropriate and as a last resort, not as a convenient workaround to address trade issues. Trade and free trade is a winning strategy for America and for our Commonwealth. Tariffs and other trade barriers are not. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Join our effort on the web at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKQL-FM in Punxsutawney, WIOV-AM, and WEEU-FM in Reading, along with WIYQ-AM and FM in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.